have no seen. Long time, oh, I adore.
If you are on the level,
well, why don't you tell me
why I'm in no see you anymore, more, more.
Let him go,
let him go,
let him go,
let him go.
Everyone keeps telling me, but my heart can no agree. Da 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 da. You me no see. What can it be? Maybe I'm crazy, but long time no see.
I hear the horns, and I think that's a call to come to order and for the horses to get in the ready for the race and so on. And yes, it is WHFR Dearborn here at Henry Ford Community College. We are the station making ways, WHFR.FM, and it is now time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to have you with us today. Local news and alternative views here about Dearborn and the surrounding area. I want to thank Dennis and Amy for being here last week, and Lindsay too, carry on the tradition of local news like no other station in town does. And also had some fun there with that travel agent, hoping everybody could get out of town. Of course, I literally got out of town, so that's even better than the virtual thing, I guess. Sorry, everybody's looking at me very jealously here. It is nice to get out of town every now and then if you can possibly manage it. And I went to a conference. I learned some things about film. Although going to movies, you know, four times a day is a lot of people would say that's not really easy work. It is very easy.
Depends on the movie, doesn't it?
Well, I did a stand in line for over an hour at each movie before I got in. So that was, for an old person, that was pretty tough, you know. But it was a lot of fun. And this is part of South by Southwest, which is Austin, Texas, is known for both their interactive, which is their computer web conference. 10,000 people were part of that. And that overlaps the film conference. I was part of 7,000 people going to movies down in Austin. And then now, starting 2 days ago and going for about another week, is their music conference that they're quite famous for. 13,000 registrants for that. Hundreds of bands from all over the world trying to get noticed and get some attention. Speaking of bands, we're all showing off our green armbands here. not quite the same thing, in the studio today. It says, think green, renewable energy at HFCC. Yeah, today there was Alternative Energy Summit. It's still going on, a special conference here at the college. Chokes me up just to think of it. And I got over there for a free donut and some beverage, which is not maybe totally green. It's got to be healthy to be green, right?
I think it's in line.
Okay. Kermit the Frog said, you know, you've got to... It's not easy being green. I think Amy wasn't really heard there that much. Okay. Well, you did hear on the forum show a week ago, not this week, a discussion with Bill Sechrest about the summit.
It was, right, the Campus Connection.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's every second Tuesday of the month from 1 to 2, but there's going to be a special show next week.
Right.
Because our pledge drive is going to overlap, I think, on that second Tuesday in April. I don't think it was second Tuesday, but
it
whatever.
Is actually this week, it or is. This month.
Yeah. Well, anyway, next week, tune in to Dennis and Lindsay, and they're going to be featuring campus highlights for next couple weeks, maybe all the way through April even, things that you, the general public, as well as students here at HFCC, can take part in and benefit from. Like the Alternative Energy Summit today started at 8:30 in the morning. There was two major speakers to start it. Peter Sinclair, who I met last year from Green Man Studio, which is he's a environmental consultant, and he was doing the 2010 climate update today. 65 degrees and clear. Now, he was doing, of course, the worldwide climate issue and talking about that, as well as renewable in Michigan. Matt Roush, is it Roush or Roush?
I think it's Roush.
Roush, the WWJ News Radio, was here, and he gave a great presentation, according to our VP, Marge Schwann, who gave the introduction and sort of was the coordinator for this today, and she said he was just fantastic. So it's good to know that a news person can be that highly regarded. Let's try to move up to that standard somehow. And then at 10 o'clock, they had a breakout sessions. And get this, there were seven different presentations going on all at the same time in different rooms. I hope you couldn't hear the people in the next room coming through the wall. But so many things. New automotive technology, energy optimization program. Optimization. How we got here in this mess? No, how we got here today, and how we have to change things. Renewable movement in Michigan. There's a Clean Energy Coalition a representative that was here. Smart lighting, which we're switching to here at the college in every building, which means if you're not there, it's not on. That's really smart. Right? Without people, although a kitty cat could probably set it off too. So,
is it sensor related?
Yeah,
it's all sensors. It's not changing the actual lighting. It's the electronics.
No. Well, of course, you can switch bulbs and save energy too, as we know. And there's all kinds of things that would affect that. And they probably talked about that too. It's a whole hour in there. Energy issues, sustainability in green buildings, and some buildings can be made more green, more energy efficient, mm-hmm. and insulated and so on. And we didn't even get to breakout number two, which was 11 to 12. New automotive technology. We had a representative from General Motors here, Dr. Kristen Zimmerman. And not to be outdone, Ford had a presentation too. Were they back to back? I don't see that here. But they had cars to do test drives. Hybrid cars were here from both GM and Ford, and you can go out on the roads and drive them around and hopefully come back with them for the next person. And all the stuff on super hydrogen highways, I don't even know what that is. Wind projects in Wyandotte is going to be this afternoon at 2:30. And I know Dennis and Amy may be sliding over there. Geothermal heat pumps, which will almost work in this area. They say they do in Detroit. There's a company that specializes in that for large buildings. That's where you get the heat that is underground, which is not as cold as above ground, to help heat the place and cool it, too. Mm-hmm. That heat is like an energy source. And they don't use it, you got to dig down 100 miles or something. No, it's just something about 8 or 10 feet or 12 feet.
Go into your own basement. You'll see it work every time.
Right.
Well, in the summer, it's cooler, of course.
Much cooler and warmer.
Right. And there's things they can do, although geothermal, I understand, is not really a tremendous advantage unless you go into a very hot climate or a much colder one, like Traverse City, I know, has a few
I think it's one of those homes. Long-term payoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of new home construction.
So much of this is, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I agree.
And then at 3:30, so there's seven sessions at 2:30. At 3:30, which means folks listening to this today on Friday the 19th of March, you could still get over here. It's free. And you just sort of slide in, and yeah, you could sign up and get a green armband unless they're all gone. And but just, you know, there it's all, they'll give you a program. It's all listed. Just get on in here at 3:30. Wind Energy in Michigan, a couple people from the Green Panel, which is a company. Automotive Technology of Tomorrow from Victor Gregory right here at HOCC. Peak Oil, which a professor from University of Michigan Dearborn next door, Barry Waldron, going to speak about that. Mm. Latest I read, because I've said it's probably already happening, is that peak oil is going to be 2014, which means that after that, we just won't have any more unknown quantities. It's the gas is going to go up in price exponentially almost from year to year because there's going to be less and less. So right now, we've still got more and more coming, but by 2014, no more gasoline. And so how long can you keep those gasoline-powered cars going by affording the cost of gas, which could be, you know, $5 a gallon in 2015, could be $10 a gallon in 2016 or 2017. Just won't be able to keep doing that gas car, folks, and I think Ford knows that too. But now, I'm just overlooking the Ford presentation here. I know they had someone coming. I just don't see a name. So it's interesting that GM is, with all that bailout money from the government, they're heavily promoting, of course, their Chevy Volt, which is an all-electric car, although it costs $45,000, but coming out later this year. And I saw the Volt at Austin. They were a co-sponsor of South by Southwest, Chevy, GM Chevy.
Good for them.
Except the Volt I saw was just the chassis and the electric motors at the front wheels. So there's not even any batteries, no seats. So they couldn't do a test drive. And then they had,
that was,
I thought,
the $20,000 version.
Yes, right. Yeah, all the chassis you want for $20,000, yeah. And then you can add the seats yourself.
Exactly.
You
know, that's maybe, like cart, maybe, right? You don't need all the seats.
No.
Or you could use these canvas lawn chairs or something.
There
you
we
know,
go.
To save a little cost. And
flexibility.
Very lightweight.
Like.
And bring your own airbags. You could blow up some balloons and put them in front of you, you know. Sort of a do-it-yourself car. What
sure.
The heck?
I'm glad he didn't go to mother-in-law jokes, but go on. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Oh, and even
saving that for me.
Interesting presentation. GM's first green dealership, Ryan LaFontaine. And LaFontaine is a big auto mm-hmm. conglomerate here in Dearborn. Is it Michigan Avenue and Telegraph? They have several different. I know they have a Honda. They have a
Toyota. Was Toyota. The first, I believe.
Yeah. And they maybe, are they going to be the first GM green dealership? Are they going to come into GM? I thought GM was cutting back on dealers. Although they're reestablishing a bunch that
yes,
they had
it
cut
is
out,
up and down.
So
yeah.
Who knows? But they, Ryan LaFontaine, is here at 2:30 or 3:30 to actually, and he should know because he's one of the owners, probably, or mm-hmm. one of the future owners of LaFontaine.
Right?
If his parents still own, if he's a son or something. So that's good. And U.S. Detroit Regional Chapter of Green Building Council, biofuels in Michigan from Dennis Paddington from Michigan State University. And I've heard of this guy from the Michigan Environmental Council, Hugh McDiarmid. McDiarmid. Maybe you haven't heard that, but I have before, all kinds of places. One of the most knowledgeable people on environmental policies in Michigan, and he talks about renewable. One of the books they're giving out there free, and there's all kinds of expos and displays for free, too. This is at Henry Ford Community College main campus today only, the 19th. It goes until 4 o'clock, 4:30. Wayne County Department of Public Services is giving out a resource recovery guide. And what is in there? Well, all kinds of ways for you to recycle and reuse in the area of Wayne County. And it's just, it's unbelievable the stuff that you can do to recycle and reuse. And even what I always do every spring, healthy lawn care tips, like let the grass grow higher. And so a little free book. And let's see. Repower America is there with a presentation, and that, of course, is the organization that Al Gore started. It's
okay.
The Green Energy Recycling Organization. They're still lobbying heavily to...
I thought that said Repo America.
It does, but you didn't see the... You're
no.
Colorblind. You can't see
yeah.
the W-E-R there. That's an idea, too.
Well, yeah, but we'll go that into that later in the show.
Got a brochure on the Volt, even though they didn't have one there. They had a
vehicle.
A talking point. Yeah, it looks like a $20,000 car, but it's $40,000. So anyway, that's for Dennis.
What building is that in?
It's in the Mazara Conference Center, but also known as the Administrative Services and Conference Center, ASCC. But if you're driving down Michigan Avenue, just south of Ford Road, it's Mazara is the big name. That's our former president here of Henry Ford Community College. When he retired, they named the building after him, since he actually was instrumental in getting the building built for the Ford UAW organization. When Ford and UAW were trying to do job retraining about 15 years ago, they decided to put their national headquarters somewhere, and they decided to put it here at this college, thanks to the invitation from Dr. Mazara, with the understanding that after 20 years, it would be ours.
All right.
It became our new administration building. So we got an administration building at no cost to us. And it's a small conference center, too. And, well, anyway.
I'll walk you over there, Amy, after. You don't know where it is.
It'll protect you.
Yeah.
All right. So from 3:30 to 4:30, and all kinds of people participating. And I'm sorry if you didn't know about it in advance. We told you here. You aren't listening. You aren't writing these things down. And maybe you have to work for a living during the day, and good for you. Share the wealth. A lot of people don't have a job at all. But these are things that we have to plan on doing. We need a conference like this almost every week. I'm sorry, but all that free food, you know. No, I mean,
he goes right for that, doesn't he?
Well, there was a couple of students over there, because everybody's invited.
And so everyone likes donuts.
Can I get a free lunch? Oh. No free lunch. There is a special lunch you could buy for extra that was over here just finishing now. But I said there's free donuts and coffee and tea and free water over there. And he said, yeah, I'll get that. Don't worry. I'm looking for the free stuff on the tables now. So anyway, however you get into it, you know, it's you've got to be involved in this, and you've got to do what you can. There are stories here locally, but let me just stay with, because they usually try to update people about health reform, and I know everybody's screaming and crying, you know, Marxism on the conservative TV channels, and this is nowhere Marxism. Come on, folks, open a civics or a government book. This is barely even socialism. I mean, the whole plan is just, this is a progressive talking, is a boondoggle for all the private insurance companies and the private medical companies and the private drug companies. It's an invitation for more profit. Oh, yeah, they have to now insure everybody somehow if the person can pay the money for the insurance. And they can't kick people off for pre-existing conditions after 2014 for adults. So it's still 4 years. They're going to kick everybody off before then. Believe me, they will find every excuse, because they're given 4 years to kick everybody off, and then they can't come back probably. Anyway, it's just like they did with credit card reform. All the credit card companies changed all their fees to what's legal, and now that that's in place, oh, sure, no overdraft fees. But they got other fees that they added. So crazy. So, nonetheless, Dennis Kucinich, and I'll just sum this up, he's been reported that he switched his position as a progressive, and he's going to vote for the bill, and they're going to try to get the majority to support it in both the Senate and the House. Imagine democracy in action. But they have to use that special tactic called reconciliation, because they don't have 60 votes in the Senate.
So it doesn't really feel like democracy in action to me.
Well, it should. I know it should. And as I said on the show, too, the Republicans, when they were in power between Clinton and it was 8 years, George W., they used it 11 times. So they used reconciliation 11 times in 8 years. So no big deal for them. Nobody's saying they were being Marxist or socialist or undemocratic. And by golly, folks, it's not an undemocratic to do reconciliation. It's simply a way to avoid the filibuster, which was a rule of the Senate, not even anything in the Constitution. So if it's a rule, they can undo that rule. I mean, let democracy, which is the majority rule, folks, let that happen. We still got committee structure. We still got the two houses that have to work things out. Get that filibuster thing out of there, or somehow make it a special situation. I don't know what it would take. But anyway, Dennis has an impassioned statement that he read in front of Congress, and it probably wasn't fully reported anywhere, about how he's going to vote for this and why. He does say he's going to continue struggling for the rights of working class people and for health care. And of course, not everybody will have health care if this passes. And it's going to force people who don't have health insurance to buy it out of their own pockets, which I don't think is... And he feels that health care is a civil right. And let me just state, because on this show, our opinions are those of ours only, not necessarily anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, or students, or Board of Trustee members, for that matter. I agree with Dennis Kucinich. Health care is a civil right. I love the phrase from our Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That first word is life. Without life, and I interpret that to mean health, there's not much chance for liberty, because you're too sick to go vote. And then pursuit of happiness, you can't be very happy when you're sick and in pain. Although all of us have to go through a lot every day, and there's, you know, you have to just grin and bear it. You have to get through a little bit of pain and inconvenience and so on every day. You got to keep struggling. But I really do believe, as all civilized countries in the rest of the world believe, health care is a civil right. And I'm not changing that opinion there. And so obviously, as I've said in the past, I am for universal single-payer health care. And it's somewhat humorous, at least the ire that he expresses, and he's a very good writer, Michael Moore, our Michigan filmmaker, who is not only born in Flint, Michigan, but based in Flint, Michigan. He moved his company back to Traverse City area, back to Michigan, from New York, to help the economy here. You know, and we've got a mini film production facility in the Traverse City area, thanks to his relocating and bringing all of his staff with him, many of whom bought homes in Michigan just to be just keep their jobs in his company, too. And he's such a good writer. And if we have time at the end, I'd like to read some of his editorial from Wednesday this week when he was in Congress trying to lobby for something better than what they have. But it's a little late for that. If you hadn't heard... the Democrats, of course, by reconciliation or whatever it takes, are going to try to pass by majority some kind of health care reform, which includes the bad stuff and some good stuff, too, before Sunday. That's sort of a 72-hour countdown that started yesterday on Thursday. All right. So what's happening locally? What should we talk about?
So I'm still on the last story. I'm thinking President Obama still needs to give a few more... a few more people a ride in Air Force One to change votes, because that seemed to be a big factor for Dennis Kucinich. A ride or two on Air Force One. And
were they able to meet Harrison Ford on the plane, too?
That would work with me.
I think he helped pilot it.
He was the best president of any actor playing a president. Oh, other than Bill Pullman on Independence Day.
Morgan Freeman, Deep Impact.
Oh, I forgot Deep Impact.
Very, very good.
And I don't know the
Morgan
actors.
Freeman for president.
Yeah, that'll go.
I mean, he was president of South Africa, too.
He was Mandela, that's right.
What could he can be president of any country.
That's right.
Talk about good acting, huh? Okay, moving right along here.
I won't stay stuck in the past.
You won't?
Well, maybe, I don't know. Just a little bit. Flashbacks.
Now, we have so much going on here.
I was going to talk, or Amy, if you had the story, who had the printout about the Ficori sale?
It's right here.
Okay, do it.
Do it. Mr. Ficori, I'll read from the beginning, frustrated with what he calls a lack of commitment from city officials regarding his developments in West Downtown Dearborn. Resident Hakeem Ficori says he's prepared to sell off his properties and take his business elsewhere. He means it, too. In fact, they're already City Council President Tofalsky said, well, we hope that this, because let me take one step back. What Ficori says is that he hopes somebody else will pick up where he left off and make this a something viable in Dearborn, and Council President Tofalsky agrees that he should. There's a lot of stuff going back and forth here. I mean, there's too much to read over, but there's some mudslinging, and there's some pointed, this didn't happen because of the mayor. There's people that went into properties that were, this is just a very in-depth piece, four pages. But basically, Kim Ficori is taking his toys and he's going home. Mm-hmm. He's done. And,
but how many years has he had that property that he hasn't developed?
5 years.
And some of it, you know, he said, oh, I've got lofts and condos, and that's part of his property, I know. And they have a picture in the paper there which says the dream is over.
Wow.
For sale.
That was something. That was, yeah. And the for sale signs in the one building, and I know it's right on the corner of Monroe and
Military.
Michigan.
Michigan
actually.
And Military, yeah. I think.
Well, there's one on Monroe also, right on the corner.
Yeah, he's got a lot of
a carpeting
properties.
Store,
yes.
I think. Anyway, right there, it says for sale, the dream is over. And that's... Mm-hmm.
It's a different sales technique, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I was looking for a place to invest in, that sign would be very encouraging.
Well, his dream is
because,
over.
Yeah, but, I wish him well wherever he finds another place to create his dream. But it didn't work for him here, and I know he blames, even in that article, he indirectly, and my apologies to Mr. Fakuri if he misinterprets this, otherwise I'm not going to apologize, he had to sell the property at this point in time.
Right.
Because his bank that he had the loans with on the land called him in and showed him the article from the Dearborn Times Herald talking about his difficulties.
Yes.
And they said, well, that's too many for us, and we're calling it in. It's the end of the game, sort of, whatever the details were on that. And so it kind of implies, it's not stated there, that if it wasn't for the Times Herald actually reporting the facts, he could still have the land and still be waiting another 5 or 10 years. Although, the last thing I read before I left was he did not sign the developer's extension that the city passed last December. So, in fact, he doesn't even have a developer's contract with the city. He still has the land, although now the bank wants the money.
Well, here's the reason why it says, Fakuri said he refused to sign the latest extension after he learned that the University of Michigan Dearborn was exploring alternative locations to the student housing project. That was a big, major, major part of his... a part of this whole development plan.
Well, it was a chunk of probably what he thought was fairly secure money.
Well, look at it this way, though. If you take too long, I'm going to go somewhere else anyway.
But
right?
But if he signed the developer's plan and he still couldn't develop, he'd just lose the rights. Maybe he could have found something other than the student housing to go there. I mean, the extension was another year, wasn't it?
Right.
Or
12 months.
Months.
No, 12.
Another 12 months.
Absolutely.
So that's giving up on your dream a little early. I mean, if the city... after pushing and shoving and harassing on both sides, gave him the extra 12 months and he didn't sign the agreement.
Just so much to
he
this.
He just gave up.
People wanted to go into the properties to check them out, to basically inspect them, and he wouldn't let them. He said somebody went in without his permission and that hurt him legally. And there's just so much going on here that, it's a lot of, nobody's taking blame.
This is a principle with news, folks. You can never get the full story in the paper. Or on the show, although we try to add some questions.
And insights, sure.
Insights if we have any, but at least questions and critical analysis is usually just questioning, like, what about this? What about that? We don't know about this. And then there's many points of view, interpretations. So, and there's only three of us here, but, there's more interpretations, and Mr. Fakuri's interpretation, and it could go on quite a while.
And coming in 2005, He certainly purchased a large amount of property at the height of the market and has had to sit through, a devastating real estate market. So it just complicates things. Certainly.
Well, yeah, it's not even a matter of you can't find people. If you can't develop it, the people are after it's developed, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's a crazy situation, and I really I'm like Mr. Tofalsky, I'm hopeful that somebody will come in and say, hey, no, wait, we can make this work, and then they will.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I mean, the land is probably worth a little bit less now than when he bought it, even, but for somebody that has a little money and has a good idea, like a local business or whatever, I bet that would be a pretty good deal. Those are some prime locations.
Absolutely.
Right on Michigan
sure.
Avenue
oh,
there.
Oh, man.
And I'm sure the city development office would give any support. And you don't have to be one person buying all of it, for gosh sakes. Let's just get it sold, get it occupied. I know, of course, the mayor and our development director, whose name escapes me now, in the city. Yeah, I'm sorry. But, I mean, they're probably working on it right now to keep the ideas flowing. And Chamber of Commerce and everybody that's anybody is going to try to get some. Now that the property is going to be freed up, or is now, I guess, officially on the market, now other people who might have had some good ideas but were frustrated before because there's no good places to buy. There's some good places to buy now, I think. I never thought that the lofts or the condos right on Michigan Avenue was a great idea. I mean, all those cars passing day and night, a little noisy unless they're totally soundproof. But
in other cities, that has been, until the real estate bottom sort of fell out. I mean, that's been a big construction pull and a big pull. I know in Royal Oak.
Well, I know in Traverse City where I visit too that the most expensive residences are right on the two main streets there.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Front Street and State Street or whatever.
In Traverse City and in Royal Oak, it's been a while since I've been to Royal Oak, honestly. Is the speed limit slower than 35 as you're going through that main part of town?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's 25.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, I think in Royal Oak you have options where you can I don't know what they're called, but you bicycles on the sides, right? Aren't there lanes for bicycles?
No. Not on the main streets.
I thought there were.
Mm-hmm.
There. No. Up in Traverse. Anyway, those are things.
That's in Austin, Texas.
Oh, God. See, I've been listening to
them. Bike Colorado lanes, and
downtown, a lot bike lines.
Right, thanks for the geography.
Bikes everywhere. So.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. There's two segues. One is that Burton Katzman, if it wasn't mentioned last week, and the city of Dearborn are at odds over completion of last West Village Commons condos. And the hang-up here, just briefly, is that Burton Katzman, who have been told by the court, build those condos you promised, build the rest of them, okay, now say they can't because the foundation that they already put down there is cracked or rotting or the reinforced concrete, which is, there's metal there, it's all rusty, so it's not very well reinforced if you got rusty steel. Because it was exposed to the weather for all these years. Well, whose fault is that? They were the ones that didn't build when they were supposed to, when they were expected to. And so I don't know if they're going back in court or what. I really don't care at this point. Burton Katzman, I thought it was too easy for the city to just assume that because they won in court that Burton Katzman was just going to plunk down another whatever it was, a couple million, whatever, and 12 million, and build them, build the rest of them. Yeah, they didn't. Okay. And so they're fighting it.
One question I had, and I don't know a heck of a lot about construction, but it says the pads in question, the pads that are crumbling, mm-hmm. Were poured more than 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So fairly recently. Is this something that should be happening? And that caught my attention.
What I know, you should protect those metal rods that make the concrete reinforced. They're steel, and 2 years of exposure to Michigan weather, the snow, the ice, the rain, they'll start rusting, and the water seeps down in, and the concrete will expand and contract because it's exposed to the extremes of heat and cold. And so just knowing what I know in general about these things, I think 2 years, they could be in bad repair. I know the city is going to do an inspection, and Burton Katzman, so they're going to argue between their two inspecting teams, and then they'll probably have to go back to court, I guess. And I don't really care about the details, but I feel sorry for Unity Studios in Allen Park, the film people, who they gave the total $100 million construction contract for Unity Studios to Burton Katzman. Yeah, right. Well, that's not going to happen either, I don't think. But we'll see. Supposedly, Unity had that money up front, so it's not a matter of raising money.
Really, that is what it takes with Burton Katzman.
Maybe. Yeah. I guess the other minor segue is, also in the Pressing Guide this week, Wednesday, March 17th, happy St. Patrick's Day for those that remember that day, the downtown West Dearborn, which you've been talking about, starting road work. Yeah, so that's going to be very slow going, probably below 25 miles an hour. It's going to start on the 29th, March 29th, along Michigan Avenue between Brady and Outer Drive. And there's some much-needed repairs have to be worked on there. A lot of people drive on there, and they're supposed to be finished, they say, July 10th. So good luck trying to get through West Dearborn. Maybe more people will have a chance to see those for sale signs. Although all the businesses there will be suffering because people will try to go on some road other than Michigan Avenue once that starts. So just another little setback or another grin and bear it moment. It was in the papers last week. Dearborn Tower is up for sale. Everybody knows about that in Dearborn now.
Yeah, we mentioned that a couple weeks ago.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So get out your checkbooks.
I think, the question in my mind will be, and I didn't see when they updated the story, it seemed to be there were two different, looking down on from the Times Herald from Wednesday's March 17th, the mayor said he would be looking for about $7 million for the complex. Let's hope they get that.
They bought it for just $1
million. Yeah.
So, well, that was many years ago.
It's a great idea.
And that article concludes with an interesting quote from him, too, and I don't have it here in front of me.
But he was saying it isn't a fire sale. They're not in any rush.
No,
but,
it might take maybe 18 months or so. And, you know, I'm going to paraphrase it because I don't think I have it in front of me from the mayor finally about the Dearborn Towers is that he said before he cuts back on fire.
Right, or actually, I saw that in here.
Police. Mm-hmm. Or what was the third one?
Hold on.
He's going to sell the thing. Yeah. Okay. So, and I think his priorities are straight on that.
I'm not going to close libraries and libraries. Laugh police
right.
and fire to run an apartment yeah. complex in Florida.
Right. Although he is proposing, and there was a library commission meeting in the city last Friday to start figuring out what to cut further. So the libraries are going to be extremely cut back, supposedly becoming 21st century libraries, where you can actually go online and request a book or even download it electronically or something if they ever get to that.
Jay, is that something you have a problem with? Because I remember we talked about this a couple weeks ago, and you felt like there might be something down the road that could be, it could slippery slope kind of thing.
Well, yes. The slippery slope thing is for all information in our society to become electronic, and then it's so easy to change it or wipe it out. I think of George Orwell's 1984.
Sure.
Also Rollerball. There was another great classic sci-fi movie.
I think it's the second reference we've had to Rollerball and losing classic.
Losing the 14th century.
Yes,
whoops.
That's it.
Oh, there was nothing that happened there. A couple of bad popes and a plague. That's all. Don't worry about it. We just lost the 14th century today, folks. All the information gone in it. But the point is, whoever controls information and reliable information, in other words, I think a library, if anything, okay, it should be a reference library. Okay, all the hard facts and information about our society, even nonfiction books that talk about politics and society, we need hard copies for people to go to. In all the movies I've seen, the murder mysteries and that, the ultimate answers are when they dig to those in those archives, and they get the original bits of paper and the original documents. What's that one show about cold case where they actually they got to go through all the original evidence, but they still have it.
Right.
They didn't. What are you going to just have an electronic file that somebody could change at any point, and you never could find out really what really happened or who voted how in Congress or legislature. So we need the libraries as much as possible. Maybe my suggestion would be shift to reference and nonfiction facilities. We don't need the pop books. They can get them many other ways or online or download them. It may be with the help of the library, but the library needs to keep some stuff secure as an archive.
Sure.
Especially Dearborn libraries, all Dearborn information.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking more of a library will become more like a museum?
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes. It needs to because we can't be electronic. It's not secure enough.
Well, in museums, the zealousness with which they protect the stuff in museum, I mean, you're talking about some pretty important stuff in our society, too. I get it.
Right.
Yeah, makes sense.
And even police records. And, there are things that we have to have for access, and it has to be the real object, the real deal, the real thing. Just like a lot of people, thank goodness, because they still had blood samples in some of those case file boxes, are able to be found innocent of crimes and released from prison. I mean, you can't put that on, an electronic document. It says, the blood, the work was inconclusive. Yeah, but because they saved that sample, today's techniques say, okay, we can read that DNA. It was too small for the technology then, too small a sample, but we can figure it out now. And so that's just, that's one of those forensic science things. But think about all society and all issues here. If we don't keep these resources, in fact, I was just thinking today, since I realize that I'm living, 30 miles away from two nuclear plants, one of which is closed and shuttered because it almost did a meltdown, if it would have had a meltdown, would have killed everybody in Detroit and Toledo by the next morning, or at least, 250,000 in Detroit and Toledo, and then the whole land and property would have been irradiated so that nobody could have lived in southeastern Michigan for 200 years.
That's not as fun as it sounds.
After that. Well, I have a copy of the book that came out that was a nonfiction book done by research, We Almost Lost Detroit, and it was published, I think it was John Fuller was the author, and I don't know where my copy is now. And I thought, oh my God, that's a resource I want to keep around. People may have forgotten that event at Fermi 1, mm-hmm. which doesn't work now and is shielded for 200,000 years. It has to be kept intact. Otherwise, the liquid sodium inside, which is irradiated with plutonium, will come out as a cloud, not a nuclear bomb. And unless there's a good wind that'll take it to Canada and kill them over there, it'll
friends
just
to the north.
Yeah, or to the east in this case, if the wind goes to the east. It's just going to slowly disperse to Toledo and Detroit, and we're going to have the same problem. So it's that danger is not gone. And so I was just kind of scared, and I was thinking, where's my copy of We Almost Lost Detroit? Does our local public library still have a copy? 1966?
You haven't found it?
No. No, I was going to go online and see if I can buy another copy, because that's an historic document. Mm-hmm. Of course, I had slipped into the book also a multi-page PR release from Detroit Edison, who finally had to come up with something, and the title of that short essay was, We Did Not Almost Lose Detroit. Well, that's stupid. We did almost lose Detroit, but there wasn't any release of radioactivity at the time, but now it's... That whole thing is a total shell and a loss and still a danger for 200,000 years.
I wonder how many people are there actually working to make sure that is not interfered with. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
security. And
well, I don't want to get into that because I talked about that after 9/11. I think I gave some terrorists some ideas. I mean,
yeah.
You can't. You haven't given anybody ideas that aren't already... there.
Well, I don't know. I wonder sometimes, really?
No. I don't think so.
I think it was Mencken that said it was such a thing as
like
an original thought.
Airplane hijacking, it required a Hollywood movie that showed an airplane hijacking in 62 before it started happening. Hmm. Nobody had thought of hijacking an airplane, you know, coming on board with a gun or a knife and getting into the pilot and threatening people's lives and take me to Cuba.
I think Amy's point is that maybe they have thought of it, they just hadn't executed it yet, correct?
Yes.
Well, and yeah, the stimulus is still an issue. So,
yeah.
But Fermi 2 is down there, and it's a different kind of nuclear energy facility, somewhat safer design, if that's possible, for a nuclear facility. But I was looking for the book. I'm thinking, where can I find it? I'd like to read it again. I'd like to have it available for other people. People here in this area, 30 miles away from Fermi 1, as well as Fermi 2, you need to read that book. Because not just that first plant, but the second one could have a meltdown too. It doesn't have the liquid sodium, but it could still release radioactivity. And scary stuff. And we have to have the right perspective from the people at the time. Not people today saying, oh, well, we've had no problems after it was sealed. You know, there's no danger there. Yes, there is. Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't want to do gloom and doom here. Let's do.
See you next week.
Yeah, that's enough for today. Oh, let's have some fun.
I'm sad.
With,
I'm gonna leave.
Yeah, I'm sad.
Let's have some fun with Jim Hightower. He's got a couple of progressive comments, and whoops, that one already started playing. So I'm not going to let you hear that yet. Another corporate path for buyouts, and maybe we could form a beer party. You've heard of the Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. So listen up here, folks. I know it's not St. Pat's Day, but...
Who's going to drive them all, though?
Very entertaining.
Me. I always get stuck doing it.
Okay. So listen up here to, a total of 4 minutes and 20 seconds of Jim Hightower. And again, you may not agree with his opinions, but he's got some challenging ideas and always points out some social ironies that maybe we should be aware of. Take it away, Jim.
Like the 5-man majority of Supreme Court justices, perhaps you've been worried sick over the possibility that corporations just don't have enough power over our government. If so, let me soothe your fevered brow with a report showing that election spending is just one path that corporations take to buy our government. Many other lanes are also open to them. There. Feel better now? One wide open path is through both the Republican and Democratic Governors Associations. Both outfits offer corporate membership packages that literally let drug makers, utilities, tobacco companies, and other giants buy their way inside these two powerful groups. For annual dues of up to $250,000, a corporation's executives and lobbyists not only get to hobnob with these top state officials, but also to sponsor, organize, and participate in periodic policy discussion with the governors. Is this a sweet deal for the companies? Absolutely, enthused a tobacco executive. After all, these corporations have big money at stake on everything from state taxes to regulatory policies, and buying their way into the group's gathering lets them bend the ears of America's governors and bend the governor's policies. Regular citizens and public interest groups never get this kind of special access, so it gives the corporate powers a big jump on everyone else. Last year, for example, some 200 drug industry lobbyists organized a forum on biotechnology for Democratic governors. In this cozy setting, the biotech corporations had a one-sided chance to plead for state subsidies and regulatory favoritism. And practically every governor who attended followed up by pushing what the industry wanted. This is Jim Hightower saying, in so many different ways, you see, corporate money doesn't just talk, it shouts. And, in so doing, it drowns out the rest of us.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Would you have tea with me? I'm talking to you authentic teabag folks, those who are not corporate-funded Republican Party spinoffs, and those whose minds are not nailed shut by a simplistic anti-government laissez-fairyland ideology. Let's talk. You Tea Partiers who are fed up with Washington and the leaders of both political parties? Hey, count me in! And the target of our anger doesn't stop there, does it? Politicians are the face of our problems, but we all know that behind those faces is the real power that's stomping on us. Wall Street banksters, corporate downsizers, the 13,000 corporate lobbyists swarming our government, and the political consultants and media yakkers who exist only to segment and divide us. Let's talk about it all. The whole corrupt insider system of moneyed elites who are systematically destroying the middle class and perverting the political process to shut out the voices of America's workaday majority. Let's discuss this big theft. But most importantly, let's figure out what to do about it. Whether you call yourself conservative or progressive, what can we do together to decentralize and democratize our country's economic and political power? Putting America back on its historic mission of trying to build a nation of, by, and for the people. Another organization has suddenly sprouted across the country that might help get us together. It's called the Coffee Party. Not meant to counter the Tea Party, but to engage it positively. Check it out at coffeepartyusa.org. This is Jim Hightower saying, who knows, maybe we can all merge into a beer party. Beverage preferences aside, the important thing is for ordinary grassroots Americans to reach across false divides, see what it is that we have in common, and start acting like the bosses of our government, our society, and our mutual destiny. That's what it really means to be an American.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
So what's your preference, folks? We're back here on the new WHFR Journal, the station making waves, WHFR.fm. From Henry Ford Community College, the opinions expressed here are not necessarily any of those from anyone else at Henry Ford Community College. I'm here with Dennis and Amy. My name is Jay, and there you are. So we're going to continue with local news and alternative views. One of the things that's very local all around the U.S. is the U.S. Census, and we had a good interview with a direct employee of the census system.
Tara Green.
Last show, that's right. Mm-hmm. And I think he answered maybe most of people's questions about the privacy issue and so on. I'm sorry to say I just got it in the mail when I came back last night, and I didn't fully look at it. It seemed to go on for pages, but in fact, it depends. They want to know specifics, not too many, but specifics about every person
exactly
in your house.
Yeah.
And I did look this up. The U.S. Constitution says that everybody's got to be counted. That's all it says. It doesn't say anything else. You know, we had the question, do you only count citizens or immigrants or, you know, everybody has to be counted. Now, originally, of course, the slaves were only counted, this is in our Constitution before it was amended, as 3 out of 5.
Right, 3/5.
Yeah, so even though they couldn't vote at all, they were still counted as 3/5 for each person. So it would take 5 slaves to get you 3 votes or 3 more people in your state, technically. Talk about crazy, not respecting a person, even if they are a slave, as being a full person. And of course, I hope nobody's a slave anymore. Slave to our jobs. Well, whatever. And I got this press release from the Libertarian Party, and that's one of the alternative parties. They are the third largest political party in the United States. Haven't grown a lot since the 80s. Ron Paul was their presidential candidate in 92, and they've been in every national election. And we've always interviewed people from the Libertarian Party, the Green Party, and any other party that's on the ballot. We try to make overtures here because that's what we do on the Journal. We try to make you think. We try to give you some chance to hear some of the reasons why people don't agree with the major ideas. And just because a majority of people don't know about it doesn't mean it's not any good. Okay, just means they're stupid. Oh, I'm sorry, ignorant. Until they learn about it, they're ignorant. And then maybe they could become more intelligent if they knew about it. And that's the whole democratic system. That's the whole principle of letting the minority voices be expressed. Because yes, sometimes, maybe not a lot, but sometimes minority viewpoints should become the majority. And if they're never expressed, they never have a chance to be heard and thought about and moved up to the majority opinion. And so we're all in favor of minority points of view. And so the Libertarian Party, they do oppose the census questions. Now, of course, in the Constitution, it says you've got to count people. And just basically, they feel that the federal government's current census procedures are unconstitutional, unnecessary, and too expensive. We believe the census is constitutionally limited to collecting only one piece of information. That's not a belief, folks. That's a fact. About each residence, the number of persons living in it. We urge Congress to change the census laws to comply with this constitutional limitation. They feel it would cost an awful lot less money. Okay? We don't need additional information, such as specific names, races, ages, sexes, or home ownership status. And you have to do that for everyone living in your house. So if you happen to have 20 people in your house, you're more likely probably to give up and not even send it in.
Well, that's annoying.
Because there's so many people. We want to know all these details, not a lot, but 4 or 5 things about each person.
Well, that's my thing, is that not only will it be cheaper and everything else you said, but you'll have a higher rate of participation because it's much simpler and less intrusive. Yeah. You
know? And they go on to point out the times in the historical past when the census wasn't as private as they promised. Okay. David Koppel, a libertarian, Cato Institute, has pointed out, their historical think tank research group for the libertarians. But this is true, though. It's a fact. During World War I, the Census Bureau handed over a list of names and addresses so the federal government could search for draft resistors. In World War I. And more shockingly, during World War II, the Census Bureau told the Justice Department which neighborhoods had high concentrations of Japanese Americans. The federal government then used that information to find Japanese Americans and imprison them in concentration camps. That was both California and Upper New York State. Because, oh my gosh, because they are Japanese in heritage, even if they've been here for 40, 50 years, they could be spies for the Japs. Ooh. And, I mean, that's a, you know, talk about concentration camps in other countries. That's a real black mark on the history of World War II right there. But who pinpointed those Japanese Americans and where they listed? The Census Bureau turned over their info. Oh, it's patriotic. It's a thing to do. Because if they're Japanese Americans, well, they're probably faithful to Japan still. Duh. Why would they become Japanese Americans if they're faithful to Japan? Most of them were Americans as they thought about it. And they, sure, they had connections and relatives maybe in Japan, but give me a break here. Even Congressman Ron Paul, it wasn't 92, it was 88, he was the Libertarian candidate for president, he said, quote, if the federal government really wants to increase compliance with the census, it should abide by the Constitution and limit its inquiry, just like Dennis said here, to one simple question. How many people live here? So that's the opinion of the Libertarian Party. No, they're not all conservative. No, they're not all liberal. they have independent ideas, and they are consistent in terms of how they feel their position goes to the basic core of liberty. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, of course. Without that life thing, we can't get to the liberty thing, but that's my point of view. But so if you want more information about the Libertarian Party, I'm not recommending it to you other than just finding out info. Their website is easy to know, lp.org. LP, that's their national website, and there is a Michigan chapter and branch if you want to know more.
Without life, that would also be the ultimate liberty, wouldn't it? Well, forget it. It's just a profound thought.
Ultimate lack of liberty, that's right. Okay, so we turn to Jack Lessenberry now in this week's Metro Times from Wednesday, current issue on the newsstands. Independence Day, he entitles it. Don't think the governor should be your best buddy? Well, here's your man. Now, we've talked about candidates getting in line for, and some of them sort of outside of the party regulars, you might say, for both the Democrats and Republicans, since Jennifer Granholm is term limited and can't run for governor this fall. Then both the Dems and Republicans wide open for people to see how much support they can get. And of course, the August 3rd primary will make the decision pretty much anyway for the Dems and Republicans. But there's other people who'll be on the ballot that don't have, that won't be on the primaries because they choose the candidate themselves, like Libertarian Party, Green Party. And here's another idea, independence. Here's this person talked about by Jack Lessenberry from this week. John Joseph Henry Schwartz. It's his four-word name, John Joseph Henry Schwartz.
The Schwartz.
He grew up a Republican. He supported the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq earlier. Even earlier, he served in Vietnam and afterward went back to Indochina with the CIA. Is he a CIA mole? He supported his friend John McCain for president 2 years ago and twice was endorsed for Congress by George W. Bush. This year, he's thinking about running for governor. And my fairly well-educated guess, Jack Lessenberry's guess, is that he might easily be the best we could get at this point in our history, if he can only get elected. Now, that's a lot for Lessenberry to say, because we know him as a liberal or even a progressive liberal, right? But he's suggesting you look into John Joseph Henry Schwartz. Here's the story. He said, no, he apologizes to his usual readers, I haven't been seized by Glenn Beck, commandos, and brainwashed, nor have I been forced to write this at gunpoint in a cave in Utah. I have not fallen in love with Sarah Palin's nasal whine, hand scribbles, and arrogantly stupid look. None of that. What I have become devoted to in my declining years is common sense. Democrats are not going to win the governorship this year, not after controlling the office during 8 years of recession, nor does it help that the present governor, Jennifer Granholm, has been the weakest and most ineffective chief executive in modern Michigan history. And that's his opinion, of course. I don't think there was much she could do, to tell you the truth, but the whole leadership question is a thing to raise about Jennifer Granholm. When did she rally troops, one way or the other? Don't know about that unless I lived in Lansing every day, you know, and was down in the Congress there. Maybe a lot of it has been invisible to the public. Or maybe it didn't happen at all, as Lessenberry claims. Right now, he says Democrats are gearing up for a primary fight. The unions are supporting Virgil, call me Verge, Bonero, the mayor of Lansing, who we've mentioned on the show before, and we're trying to get an interview with, in fact, right away, sometime soon anyway. We do have contact with his PR office, as Amy's nodding her head. And so next time in this area, maybe Verge Bernero, the mayor of Lansing, might be in this very studio. So better clean the floors, I guess. Okay. To be sure, Verge, Lessenberry says, has guts and some good ideas, but he's virtually unknown statewide and can come off as a little goofy. Hey, we like that around here, right, Little Goofy?
That's
one of our credos here on this show. Little Goofy can be
a lot of
really very brilliant if you get into it. Anyway, fresh. It's fresh. Goofy can be fresh, at least, if not an effective idea. All right, so plus, Lessenberry goes on, as I noted last week, he has a distressing tendency, this is Verge Bonero, to start running for a new job the moment he gets elected to something else. His main opponent is Speaker of the House, Andy Dillon from Dearborn Heights, Democrat from Dearborn Heights, who has good looks, bad hair. Yeah, they said Mitt Romney has bad hair too, but it was perfectly in place.
Yeah, it was always the same.
Always the same.
Equally bad.
I don't know. Talk show hair.
Brill cream. What do they use these days? Mousse. I can't imagine putting a moose on your head. It's got to be uncomfortable, especially the antlers, you know, part.
I think you take the antlers off.
When you put your hat on anyway. Yeah. The moose stays there, though. That's right. I never saw Milt Romney with a hat. Mm-mm. So, yeah, it'd mess up his moose.
Never seen me without one.
Mm. Well, we'll talk about that later. Okay. He says that Andy Dillon is right about his statewide workers should be on the same health care plan. So he agrees with him on that. Union leaders, especially the overpaid, bloated bureaucrats of the Michigan Education Association, either don't care or don't want to know much about the true condition of the state today. However, Dillon has proved ineffective as a leader and is suspected of having essentially Republican sympathies. Last year, he negotiated a budget deal, quote-unquote, under which the Democrats gave up everything and got nothing in return, though Dillon did get to yuck it up with Senate Majority Leader Mike Bishop on some talk shows. Also, Dillon is pro-life and anti-stem cell research, which is just fine if you want to return society to the Middle Ages. Again, that's Jack Lessenberry's opinion.
Wow.
We're finishing up here, folks. It's so exciting here in the studio, Highway 61, with Joanne Korchinska. Joanne returns today.
Yay.
For the next 4 hours on WHFR.FM, station making waves, WHFR Dearborn. To finish up about Joe Schwartz, however. Okay, here we go. Joe Schwartz, however, knows Michigan is, if it is to have a future, it lies in better educating our citizens. He was in the state Senate from 87 to 2003 and did his best to protect university funding. Yeah, but what about community college funding? Okay. He is a medical doctor who thinks abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, a sentiment that got him virtually drummed out of the Republican Party. 6 years ago, he was elected to Congress, that's in D.C., from his Battle Creek district. He was widely regarded as the best freshman congressman in the nation. I wonder if that's by Republicans, too. And 2 years later, he was defeated in a primary by a right-wing Yahoo, according to Jack Lessenberry, who was a former Bible salesman.
Hmm.
That's Battle Creek for you, I guess. Sorry, Battle Creek. I love you. I really do. Schwartz now knows he doesn't have a home in the Kool-Aid-drinking nut society the present GOP has become. He's not about to become a Democrat either. Instead, he's an intelligent guy who loves this state and knows how the legislative process works. Running as an independent is not an easy thing to do, not if you care about winning. First, he needs 30,000 signatures to get on the ballot. Then he needs to get the money, and we're talking millions of dollars, to run a credible race. That's hard enough. Plus, while he has always appealed to the distinct minority known as literate adults, people that can read, the good doctor is not a matinee idol and has never been especially good at the sillier aspects of campaigning. He is also 72, and some think that too old. But he's likely our best hope of good government. 8 years ago, when he was running for the GOP nomination for governor, he got creamed, says here, he told me, quote, this is from Joe Schwartz, I don't think people should expect the governor to be their best buddy. I think the job of the governor of Michigan is to protect people from the hazards of life, to try and make sure they have a job, and that job has benefits and that they can live, own a home, and support their family. But I'm not everybody's buddy. In fact, sometimes I'm a hardworking, and we can't say that word, he's a hardworking person.
A hardworking Joe.
Yeah. But we can't use the word he used. If that's what it takes, he says, that's fine. He's going to be tough, folks. That word also means very tough and not nice to his enemies. And Lessenberry concludes, aw hell.
Oh, I got to read this.
Say it. Aw hell, if we have to fight for our future, wouldn't it be nice to have a governor who is a well-adjusted grown-up for a change? There you go, Jack Lessenberry's opinion. It's all we have time for. Coming up now, Highway 61 with Joanne Korchinska. And glad to have you back, Joanne. Welcome to the airways. Here's that big-time theme that you haven't heard except over the radio for the last couple weeks.